Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The Philosopher Hegel, episode 2, a Wikipedia reading, which is perhaps the most sort of comprehensive, general thing where they're trying to just not give you a balanced view of the biography. They don't know what you're reading it for, which is a major thing. If you read the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, they're more trying to teach you what would be useful for a philosophy course. So we're going through here. Now, Hegel is the sort of responded to the building blocks around him, the French Revolution, the emergence of cultures, the necessary to make culture and make philosophy understandable, and the person who understood him was Karl Marx, and he combined the building blocks which Karl Marx put together with a general insight to make communism. So it had the vision of state, the vision of free will, all these different things coming in together, and the dialectical materialism. This is the functional units of Marx, sort of upgrade versions of this, which ultimately stand upon a Hegel who is looking at a Christian ethic to do with, and he is a Protestant theologian, so to speak, who is looking at the where does Christian go after the formulas of God have been unmasked? If God operates on formulas, what does it mean in terms of rational thought? So there's on one side the empiricists, which is my area, the spiritualists, which is probably Hegel and Kant, and then there's the materialists, which I still haven't really got a good view on it. So just listening to a podcast of a little Aussie trying to read it to you. So you'll have to listen to podcast episode 1 to see where we're up to. According to Hegel, the main characteristics of this unity was that it evolved through and manifests itself in contradiction and negation. Sounds wacko to me. Contradiction and negation have a dynamic quality that at every point in each domain of reality and consciousness, history, philosophy, art, nature and society leads to a further development until a rational unity is reached that preserves the contradictions as phases and subparts by uplifting them off hairborne to a higher unity. So thesis, antithesis, synthesis, this triad that he had going, which sort of seems sort of like, you know, offering their problem, here's an automatic resolution, which really doesn't get you anywhere in terms of burning through the problems of resolution. It sort of says, I'm above it all. But above that is sort of like a triad is three-dimensional. Fourth dimension is the dimension of being able to comprehend the knowledge, the self-knowledge of the relationship and trying to fit that in. That's the fourth level that I'm up to. That's not in any philosophy. This is just from tracing through robotics. This whole is mental because it is a mind that can comprehend all these phases and subparts as steps in its own process of comprehension. Well, that's almost up to my fourth level. It's rational because of the same underlying logical development order underlines every domain of reality and ultimately the order of self-consciousness, rational thought, although only in the later stages of development does it come to full self-consciousness. The rational self-conscious whole is not a thing or being that lies outside other existing things and minds. Rather, it comes to completion only in a philosophical comprehension of individual existing human minds who, through their own understanding, bring the development process to understanding of itself. Hegel's thought is revolutionary to the extent that it is a philosophy of absolute negation. As long as absolute negation is at the centre, systemization remains open, and makes it possible for human beings to become subjects. Mind and spirit are common English translations of Hegel's use of the German Geist. Some have argued that either of these terms overly psychologize Hegel, implying a kind of disembodied sophist consciousness like a ghost or soul. Geist combines the meaning of spirit, as in God, ghost, or mind, with the intentional force, which has his probably cheer this out. So, originally, force, an impulse, is wanting to do things, want to do things. This is where Newton pulled away from all. In Hegel's early philosophy of nature, draft manuscripts written during the time of university, you know, Hegel's notion of Geist was tightly bound to the notion of the ether, which is the fifth element of Aristotle, and the idea sitting in physics, amazing. And we've proven that ether does not exist, from which Hegel also derived the concepts of space and time, but in his later work, after Journey, he did not explicitly use the sole notion of ether anymore. So this is ether disproved by Einstein. Sort of pretty amazing. Central to Hegel's conception of knowledge and mind, and therefore to reality, was the notion of identity in difference. That is, the mind externalizes itself in various forms, and the objects that stand outside it or opposed to it, and that through recognizing itself in them and with itself in these external manifestations, so they are at one with the same mind and the other than mind. Kant and the not other negation is pretty amazing. The notion of identity in difference, which is ultimately bound up with the conception of contradiction and negativity, is the principal feature of differentiating Hegel thought from other philosophers. Okay, you have just heard me pick up my phone call, and I have to split from here to catch a train in to pick up my daughter. So I've got roughly another half hour of reading, I suppose. It won't take that before I have to go out the door. So I just had to go and check things. So what all this means is that Schopenhauer trying to actually try and gauge, there's not a clear separation between science, what we consider science, and philosophy, or that certain aspects of science had fallen into the trap of philosophy, and philosophers were playing around with it before we reeled it back in. So they had ether, they had Schopenhauer looking at Euclid's theorems. They had sort of no sense of how big and how much this area of philosophy would be undertaken. I'm going to sneeze here, unfortunately. Can I say that now that I've got a new valve in, I'm so delighted to sneeze. So that's central to Hegel's conception of knowledge and the mind, and therefore reality, the notion of identity and difference. I think I've already done that, in that he is a negation stuff. So in a sense, given the shortcomings of philosophies, you can see how it's gone forward. You know, this is also always interesting when people start to apply their philosophy to their, you know, a bit of philosophy about space and time, and now you're a Catholic, there's equality for religion except for Catholics, which is Locke's viewpoint. These always come down, or Schopenhauer, everything, but I think loving young men is an okay thing for various reasons, or they come up with something, a big philosophy, and it comes out with a simple set of guidelines, which is really what the philosophers of that time were there. There was no philosophy department, no study for itself. People wanted to study for... So if you wanted philosophy, you either had to be a deep thinker, or this person was a surface... to bolter and market. He sort of marketed any philosophy that was about the place. So you had that which is sort of almost true for all sciences. So it had to put things together. So that's why they sort of went in together. Okay, civil society. Hegel made a distinction between civil society and state, in which, in his Elements of Philosophy of Right. In his work, Civil Society, Hegel used the term bürgerliche Gesellschaft. Sorry, my German is obviously, I know it's a point. Although it is now referred to as civil Gesellschaft in German, to emphasize the more inclusive community. Wow. Was a stage in the dialectical relationship that occurs between Hegel's perceived opposites of the macro community of the state and the micro community of the family. So these are dialectic. These conflict. The family wants to do things, the state wants to do another. Broadly speaking, the terms was split, like Hegel's followers, into political left and right. On the left, it became the foundation of Karl Marx's civil society as an economic base. To the right, it became a prescription for all non-state, and the state is the peak of the objective spirit aspects of society, including culture, society, and politics. This liberal distinction between political society and civil society was followed by Alex de Tocqueville. In fact, Hegel's distinction as to what he meant by civil society are often unclear. For example, while it seems to be the case that he felt civil society, such as German society in which he lived, was an inevitable movement of the dialectic, he made way for crushing the other types of lesser, not fully realized types of civil society, as societies were not fully conscious and aware, as it were, as to lack the progress of their society. Thus, it was perfectly legitimate in the eyes of Hegel for the conqueror such as Napoleon to come along and destroy that which was not fully realised. Wow. So, it's sort of coming across the idea that you solve things by revolution, taking the domino theory. Okay, so the civil society, what does that mean? I'm not quite sure. What are the two things? He had political society and civil society. I don't quite understand. What is a civil society supposed to the state? Okay, now he talks about the state. So civil society and the state are different things. Hegel's state is the final culmination embodiment of the freedom of right. In the Elements of Philosophy of the Right. The state subsumes family and civil societies and fulfills them. So the state dissolves the need. So there's this dialectic between dialectic. This is conflict between state, the civil and the family, and the state is a new form above it. It's pretty chilling. All three together are called ethical life. Okay, so if you can imagine the thesis, antithesis and synthesis, the state is that next level. It's a lot of garbage as far as I can see. All three together are called ethical life. I can't pronounce it. The state involves, I'll spell it for you Germans out there so you can see how awful I am. SITTLICHKEIT. I sort of imagine a German saying, drinking a beer, anything. Sittlichkeit. The state involves three moments. In the Hegelian state, citizens both know their place and choose their place. They both know their obligations and choose to fulfill their obligations. An individual's supreme duty is to be a member of state. Sounds rip-roaring, bunch of fun. Especially, say if you've got morons all around you who've made the decisions. It hasn't got the inkling of game theory whatsoever. None of this has game theory. None of this has got sophistication. It doesn't have the standoff. Yeah, and Hegel said, and Schopenhauer said, look, people as soon as they achieve this, they'd get bored and start fighting. Okay. The individual has substantial freedom in the state. The state is objective spirit, so it's only through being a member of the state that the individual himself has objectivity, truth, and ethical life. Furthermore, every member both loves the state with genuine patriotism, but has transcended mere team spirit by effectively endorsing their citizenship. Members of the Hegelian state are happy even to sacrifice their lives for the state. Well, you'd be pretty shitful if you've been plucked off a peasant plucked off a farm and saying, here, charge those German machine guns with this pitchfork for the state. Okay, now, Heraclitus. He's a philosopher, I believe. Okay, he's a bit odd. According to Hegel, Heraclitus is one who first declared the nature of this infinite, and first grasped the nature of as itself infinite, that is, in essence as process. The origin of philosophy is to be dated from Heraclitus. I think he's a Roman one, so I'll have to work out. His is the persistent idea, capital idea, that is the same in all philosophers up to the present day, as it was in the idea of Plato and Aristotle. Well, I'll have to do that. My entire thing is that, I can't comprehend the infinity. You know what? I have a good drink, a big smoke of something. Yeah, I think I've got the infinite. And I've got it, and you next door don't have it. So if you want to find the infinite, you just have to talk to me. It's sort of like marketing the infinite. For Hegel, Heraclitus' greatest achievements were to have understood the nature of the infinite, which for Hegel includes understanding the inherent contradictories of negativity of reality, and to have grasped that reality is becoming a process of being, a nothingness, a mere abstractions. I don't know how he'll do on transcendent numbers. According to Hegel, Heraclitus' obscurity comes from being, in a true, in Hegel's terms, speculative philosopher who grasps the ultimate philosophical truth and therefore expresses himself in a way that goes beyond the abstract and limited nature of common sense and is difficult to grasp by those who operate within common sense. Hegel asserted that Heraclitus he had an antecedent, someone preceding, for his logic. There is no proposition, Heraclitus, that I would not, which I have not adopted in my logic. It seems low quality stuff. So I've got to chase this philosopher up. Hegel cites a number of fragments of Heraclitus in his lecture on the history of philosophy. One to which he attributes great significance as a fragment he translates, being is not more than not being. It sounds complete trollops to me, but okay, which he interprets to mean the following. Obviously he's a German, so I'm going to give you Germans out there a real taste of Australian German. Sin nun nicht sei dasselbe. Being and not being are the same. Heraclitus does not form any abstract nouns from his ordinary use of to be or to become. And that in that fragment seems to be opposing identities of A to any other identity B and C so on, which is not A. However, this is just complete trollop. But I sort of understand because this A, not A, the relationship between A and not A, and then their perception of it is surely A and not A is. You know, it's either A or it's not A, so you've got two groups. Automatically, if you identify something, you distinguish it. Then you've got a relationship that you distinguish it and then your knowledge of it. I don't know how this goes. So this if you put in Russell's mathematics, it would be difficult to see what was going on here. I just check what I'm doing for time. Time doing here. I've got probably 10 more minutes. Might read down to religion. Okay. Okay, guys. You poor Germans. It's enough having Hegel to be responsible for Hegel and then to have an Australian read German to you. Just so painful for you. I just feel sorry for all you Germans. If you didn't have a philosopher, I wouldn't read it. And if you didn't speak German, I wouldn't have to do it. It's your fault, Germany. However, Hegel interprets not A as not existing at all, not nothing at all, which cannot be conceived, but an intermediate or pure being without particularity or specificity. Pure being and non-being, or nothingness, are for Hegel pure abstractions from the reality of becoming. And this is also how he interprets Heraclitus. This interpretation of Heraclitus cannot be ruled out, but even if present, it is not the main gist of his thought. It just drives me insane to think of the number of people, these people have said, well, let's build an atomic bomb to blow the stuffing out of you because of this work. Okay. For his God, Hegel does not take the logos of Heraclitus, but refers rather to the news of Anaxagoras. He's another famous Greek person. Although he may well have regarded them the same, he continues to refer to God's plan, which is identical to God. Whatever the nous, N-O-U-S, new thinks at any time is actual substance and identical to limited being. But more remains to be thought in the substrate of non-being, which is identical to pure or unlimited thought. This is as crazy. This is the idea that monism, that the dot is a thought, is a real thing. You know, the difference between a thought and a real object, something with a wave function. It's just crazy. The universe is becoming is therefore a combination of being and non-being. A particular is never complete in itself, but to find completion is continually transformed into more comprehensive, complex, self-relating particulars. The essential nature of being for itself is that it is free in itself, that is, it is not dependent on anything else such as matter for its being. Limitations represents fetters which it must continually be casting off as it becomes freer and more self-determining. Right on. Whereas we would say there's transcendental, there's things with a wave function, things which have a wave function, a location in space, and then there are also, you can also count concepts. You've got a booty, I've got the concept of a triangle and all this type of stuff. The object. Although Hegel began his philosophizing with a commentary on Christian religion, and often expressed his view that he is a Christian, his ideas of God are not acceptable to some Christians, even though he has had a major influence on 20th century theology. Good God. How are we going for time? Okay. I've got 5 more minutes here before I have to cut and run. So it'll give me a paragraph. Religion. Now, religion just blows my mind. How does anyone come up with a religion and you just need so many believing people? As a graduate of a Protestant seminary, Hegel's theological sermons reflected in many of his writings and lectures. Hegel's thoughts on the person of Jesus Christ stood out from the theology of the Enlightenment. He has posthumously published Lectures on the Philosophy of Religion, Part 3. Hegel is shown as being particularly interested in the demonstrations of God's existence and the ontological proof. He espouses that God is not an abstraction, but a concrete, which is the start of you know, of the Aquinas, what is it called? Not sophist, Socratic viewpoint. God is considered in terms, I have to stop up. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.